Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
You're listening to Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan. We're going right to the phones, where we're going to be joined by Chad LaChance. And Chad, this is a type of a bite that's starting to take off. I think it's already in full swing some places and soon taking off in others, that I wrote about a long time ago for In Fisherman. I wrote articles both for the magazines and for several of their books. It's something that I have fished for decades, and it's one of the, when it's on, it's one of the most predictable fishing opportunities in reservoirs, and that's the spoon bite. And you're telling me at the tooth that it's on.
Yeah, I mean, at this time of year, it's probably the most predictable bite, I would say, of the whole season. You can pretty much count on when the water starts to cool, and we get this first significant cold snap, which we had last week. Fortunately, I wasn't here for it, but I know it got real cold for a few days, and just enough to get the surface temps to drop a bunch, and you start getting the vertical bite going, the spooning bite, and it's one of my favorites. You know, it's funny because I've never been a video game guy, but this is as close to video game fishing as you're ever going to get, and I thoroughly enjoy that aspect of it. But there's a bunch of nuances to it that you got to keep track of, or you can waste a whole lot of time bobbing around in the lake.
Oh, and you can wear your arm out in a hurry, too.
Yeah, and that goes down to equipment, so we might as well start there. I mean, the whole thing with the spoon bite is that you have to have instant responsiveness out of your tackle, because you're trying to snap this spoon vertically up and down. It's not a subtle lift. It's more of a distinct snap, as you know. You just snap that spoon up and then let it flutter. Well, if you've got a rod that's too soft or too spongy, or you have a line, you know, whatever line you're using has got a bunch of stretch or is too soft, then you lose that instantaneous response of your spoon, for starters, and you wear your arm out like you're talking about. So I do it with extra fast action rods and braided line, and the reason I do that is because I get an instant response from the spoon. The other side of it is, as that spoon is dropping back down, it's doing so on semi-slack or slack line, depending on the spoon itself, and to be able to feel those bites, the braided line and the real crisp rod will help you with that as well. So it's kind of makes my spoon respond better, and I feel my bites better. And then lastly, I use this analogy. I mean, if you're eating dinner and you smack yourself in the tooth with your fork, it's pretty miserable. And when a bass or a walleye or trout, for that matter, smacks one of those steel spoons on the fall, they don't hold that thing at all. You need to be Johnny on the spot with a hook set. And so having a really, really crisp rod and no stretch braid, I use the X5 braid for it these days, but you get a much, much higher percentage of your hook set. So the equipment's the first part of it, I think, as far as making sure you're in the ballpark.
And I would add, too, that I always put a couple feet of a fluorocarbon leader, maybe about three on there. Couple things that it, you know, obviously, hopefully it gives less visibility, but you get less tangles with that stiffer line, that leader at the end.
Absolutely. Yep. That's a key point. And in most cases, depending on the spoon, if I'm worried about line twist, I will put my swivel between my braid and my leader. I typically use 10-pound, trying 100% fluorocarbon for that leader. I might bump it up a little bit or down a little bit. If the water's real clear, I'm using a real light spoon, I might go to 8. If I can get away with it, I'll go to 12 or 15. If I'm using maybe a 1-ounce spoon in deep water, I'll bump it up to 12 or 15, because it has no real effect on the presentation. So you might as well have the tensile strength. But I put a tiny, tiny, tiny little swivel, the smallest one you can get, between the braid and the leader, and that'll help you with some line twist as well. So that's generally how I do my whole rig as far as that goes. And then the last thing that's worth pointing out right now is you need to have a quality reel. And the reason I say that is this technique is extremely hard on the anti-reverse bearings in the reel, because you've got a slack line bait, and typically it's heavy, and it might be a long ways from the boat. It might be 50 feet below the boat. And when you snap that thing, it's pretty hard on the reverse bearing of the reel. So you need to have a good quality reel for it as well, or you'll cause yourself problems with the reel in the long run as well. But when you get that equipment all set up like that, it's literally one of the easiest ways to catch fish if you can sit on top of them.
Well, and that's the next key. The next key when you're talking. It's kind of a transition into some of your other equipment, and that's the fact you better have good electronics and boat control.
Yeah, absolutely. The electronics, it's the most, without question, there's no point in the year when I'm more electronics intensive than I am at this time of the year. And it's because I am fishing vertically, which means I'm not covering any water. I need to have fish right under my boat or I have no chance of catching them. So, and that when you couple with the fact that you're typically fishing deeper, I was on Horsetooth the other day and the smallmouth bass we were catching came out of 45 to 65 feet of water. I think the deepest one that actually landed came out of 62 feet of water, and that's a long ways down. So you have a really big cone angle on your sonar unit. So with a traditional 20-degree cone, you're seeing roughly one-third of the water depth, right, as far as the width of the cone down there. So if I'm at 60 feet of water, I can see a 20-foot swath under my boat. So I've got a pretty good chance at seeing my fish and also my spoon in action and seeing how the fish are relating to my spoon. So that's a key part of it. But the other part of it is that you alluded to is the boat control. You know, when I was out the other day, the wind was blowing like 15 or more miles an hour, and that will keep you honest because – A, the boat itself is hard to hold still, and B, there's enough wind-generated current that your lure wants to swing away from the boat as well. So you have to use a heavier spoon so that you can keep it straight below the boat, if at all possible, and keep it from swinging in the wind current. So it can be a little bit intensive with all of that, but I'm sticking to my answer, Terry. If you can find fish, put a waypoint, park your boat on that waypoint, and drop a spoon on them, and do it with real crisp equipment, it's probably the easiest way to load the boat.
Yeah, now you've been telling me you've been catching some fish at Horsetooth. While we've got time left, kind of take me through what the process has been, what kind of spoon you're using, and what kind of luck you've been having.
Been having real good luck. It's not terribly difficult. The big thing is locating the schools of bait fish, and those are typically smelt that we're dealing with here at Horsetooth. If you're at Puebla, it might be shad. Shad are in the ballpark here as well. But the bottom line is we're fishing strictly offshore structure or big, long, tapering ridges or points and getting out in the – we've been starting at about the 40-foot range, and that we established that because of that's the level that the bait are most common during daylight hours is around 40 to 60 feet. So the smallmouth bass and walleyes will sit on that structure where that bait comes up adjacent to that structure. And so we scan around with the sonar units till we find the bait, and then we try to find some arches that are with that bait, either in or below that bait right on the structure, and then we drop on them from there. And we catch some of the fattest fish of the year. One thing I want to point out, though, is guys need to understand that you need to bring those fish up slowly. If you just horse them to the top because you can, you're going to have that issue with the fish basically decompressing and it'll blow their swim bladder out. So we want to release those fish. So I'll reel them up maybe 20 feet, let them fight for a minute, reel them up another 20 feet, let them fight for a minute, and then reel them up from there, and they can swim right back to the bottom. I am not a fan of people fizzing fish, what they call fizzing fish. I would prefer to take my chances and just bring them to the surface slower, and then you don't have to worry about that.
Now, last thing I really want to cover is over the last decade, a lot of people who used to do the spoon jigging have got enamored with the jigging wraps and the Johnny Darters and a lot of those type of lures, which are tremendous. They're tremendously effective. I love to fish them. I'm still a pretty big spoon aficionado, and I think the spoons have really kind of fallen out of favor, not with the fish, but with the anglers. And the fish aren't seeing as many spoons. I think people need to go back and throw some spoons. What kind of spoon are you throwing?
Oh, without question. Their spoon is far more consistent for me than say, a Johnny Darter style bait. And I use that in a different scenario, so we'll spare that for now. I use that bait a lot as well. I'm on that trend, too, but I do it not so vertical. When I'm fishing vertical, I want a Johnson Splinter. Is the number one spoon that I'm going with. People may be more familiar with the Castmaster. They're very, very similar. A Hopkins spoon, same kind of thing. And in my case, if the water's clear and the sun's out, it's always chrome and maybe with a little bit of accent color to it. And if we've got significant wind or overcast, it cuts light penetration, then it's white. But literally, those are the only two colors that I carry with me is either a chrome one with maybe some accent colors on it or a white one with maybe some accent colors, but that's it. And I typically start with a half-ounce spoon, and I may go as heavy as a one-ounce spoon. If I'm picking one, it's a three-quarter ounce in chrome. And from Horsetooth Reservoir at this end of the state to Pueblo at the other end of the state, all the way down the Front Range, it'll work everywhere you go.
And for multiple species. We're out of time, but you'll catch catfish, smallmouth, walleyes, crappies, almost everything that swims.
I caught on a jig and spoon with your wife filming me a big, giant, fat carp at Pueblo Reservoir. So you're right. Everybody will bite it. And it's because when you put dying bait fish in the system, everybody keys on it. And that's really what you're imitating at this point in the year.
All right, Chad. And people want more information, fishfulthinker.com.
Yes, sir. And I'd appreciate that very much. And of course, that social media on our YouTube channel, Fishful Thinker, across all platforms.
All right, my friend. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks very much, Terry. You guys have a good day.
All right, Chad LaChance. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll come out. We're going to talk to another avid angler who thinks he knows shotgunning with JR from Colorado Clays on Terry Wickstrom on 104.3 The Fan.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.